first I want to say thanks for doing this at Vanderbilt, Leslie, and even more thanks for your support in adding Linda Bragan to our community here in Nashville. She has done some really important work on sort of rounding out some issues in conservation and environment. That's really been a big deal for us here in Nashville. Hearing Shindo-san talk from Japan, and you saw the beautiful overheads that he had, I felt like I was at home back at the office at Bridgestone headquarters. I deal with that every day. Very complex. But thinking about Japan was very interesting. The last time I was there, I took time to go out and see the ukai fishing, which is the fishing with the little ducks on the leashes. Fabulous. If you ever get over to Japan, make sure to take time to do that. And then hearing Hertz talk about his time in Belgium and what's going on in the EU reminds me of the last time I was in Brussels. We had a little bit of an antitrust issue, and we decided we had to cancel the third day of a meeting with Michelin and Goodyear. And so I took that opportunity to go over to the English Channel and catch about 50 kilo of cod on a sunken World War II submarine. And so thinking about that was very interesting today. The beginning of our discussions by Barbara today ended with a very interesting quote that she sort of rushed right along and we didn't get time to focus on, from William Wordsworth, who said, "Let nature be your teacher." In 1994, a team of National Geographic scientists radio-collared a peregrine falcon up in the Arctic Circle, way up there in the Arctic Circle. And they tracked this peregrine falcon while it was migrating throughout the year, starting in September, way up there. And throughout that fall, it went down the East Coast. November went across that amazing Amazon rainforest and ended up all the way down in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, in about December. Hung out there in Buenos Aires for a couple of months, turned around, and went all the way back up across the rainforest, across the Gulf of Mexico. April 14th, it was over at the only natural lake in Tennessee, Real Foot Lake. We have a lot of beautiful rivers in Tennessee and a lot of beautiful lakes, but they've all been dammed. Real Foot's the only natural one. Went back up across the Canadian-U.S. border and all the way back up to where it started about the 1st of July up on the Arctic Circle. And when I learned about that, it got me to thinking about how connected we really are throughout the Americas in particular. We share a lot of things that we don't necessarily think about sharing, such as peregrine falcons. They run all the way from Buenos Aires to the Arctic Circle. And Linda asked me to share with you a little bit about how corporation like ours uses environmental management systems to deal with multinational, multi-jurisdictional environmental laws. It's a big challenge, as you might imagine. And I tie those two things together in this way. I really try to think about there really being sort of three kinds of laws. Natural laws, physics, chemistry, biology, we can't change that. You folks here are working very hard at understanding that at a whole nother level than we have in the past. But we can't really change those laws. Just understand them better, utilize them better, implement them for good or for bad. Laws of the marketplace. These are the laws that really sort of grow out of our societal perceptions. Those are founded in our sort of social norms, in our culture. But those perceptions get changed by advertising. Nano magic. Let's put it in your bathroom. Never have to clean it again. A little giggle here and there from folks who've been keeping up with that bump in the night. And then the legal system laws, the laws of governance. Or maybe let's just put legal system laws by itself and step back and think of governance as how this new technology is going to be addressed in terms of its long-term impact on our ecosystems, on our kids and grandkids, working within those three other types of laws. And in at Bridgestone, we've got tire plants all over the world. I'm responsible for directing the environmental management for the tire plants in North America. The last new plant we built was down in Aiken, South Carolina. Just came back from 3 days down in Aiken. Beautiful, beautiful place. Weather just like this, a little bit cooler even. Absolutely fantabulous. But one of the things we did while we were in Aiken was had about a 2.5-hour discussion with Sheriff Michael Hunt, who was the lead on responding to the chlorine spill December of 2005 at 3 a.m. in the morning that killed 8 people. That will drive home the importance of good environmental management among our staff that we have there. We're also building a brand new plant down in Monterrey, Mexico. It's our 10th plant in North America. And I share that with you because we make a lot of tires. You need to know who we are as a company, because that's what I get paid to do, is make sure you guys buy tires and make sure Don and his friends at EPA consider us partners. We're concerned. We care about the same things you do. We're going to get it right. All of our U.S. tire plants are in your performance track program, which means we not only have had our enforcement records looked at, and EPA says they're pretty good, not perfect, pretty good, but we also publicly say, here are the three objectives that each of these plants is going to have over the next 3 years, and we're going to report to the public outside of the compliance program on what we're going to do to improve at each of those three plants. Some of it's energy conservation, some of it's recycling, some of it's reducing the hazardous air pollutants by reformulating the materials we use. It's specific to each plant because each plant is a little different. It's in a little different technology, it's a little different stage of development. Is in a different community. What does the community need? I share that with you because the way we have used environmental management systems to deal with multinational, multi-jurisdictional environmental laws is to focus on that as a global measurement. And Peter, I'm so glad to have you here talking about ISO. And what we were told to do by our Japanese CEO about 6 years ago was in the course of the next 2 years, get every manufacturing plant in our company ISO 14001 certified with an environmental management system that's designed with the, with the systematic controls and checks and balances so that environmental issues are incorporated in our overall business plans and operations of the plants. Now, our CEO could have just said, we care about the environment, go out there and do well. That's not a very CEO-type thing to do. What he did was pick out a standardized, measurable system so that he could say, get all of your plants to implement systematic controls that will meet up to the standard of ISO 14001, which is the environmental management system standard that the ISO members have developed. And that gave us a target throughout the company, all across the globe, to put the resources and the thought into making things at each of our plants work better to incorporate the environmental requirements and management and consideration for the environmental aspects of their operations. Now, something else the CEO could have done. Now, I'll tell you a story about this in a minute. He could have said, no more waste from any of our tire plants going to the landfill by 2003. Sounds pretty good. Landfill's bad. Waste reduction good. Sounds like the right way to go. They actually did that in Japan throughout the tire industry for about a year and a half before they realized it just ain't working. And the reason it wasn't working is because of the 15 or 16 different specific waste streams that come out of the tire manufacturing process, couple of those waste streams are what we call green rubber, not green environmental rubber, but uncooked rubber, uncured rubber, not yet vulcanized rubber. And it's like chewing gum. I mean, it's not like chewing gum. It's like the chewing gum somebody just got through sticking on the bottom of a desk. I mean, it's sticky. It holds together. And this stuff, if you try to handle it, it gloms together. And we put steel cord into that green rubber to make some of the components in the tire. The steel cord, steel belted radials, that's where that comes from. And we had two waste streams. The uncured rubber-coated steel cord and green tires, uncured tires. Those are the cake batter that you put in the bundt pan and then you realize it's not going to work. There's no reason to bake this thing. There's no reason to waste the time and energy to bake this thing because it's not going to turn into a bundt cake. And so that's a waste stream. Where am I going with that? The tire industry in Japan decided no more tire manufacturing waste to landfill. And so what folks did in the tire industry in Japan is they set aside a room and took those green tires, which are all the different components of a tire wrapped together, glommed together. Remember the sticky gum under the table? And they took bottles of solvent and put it on the connecting points and pulled it back apart. Volatile organic compound emissions, that's speaking to Commissioner Sloan, I know. And doped that up so you could get it to pull apart and then wrapped it in saran wrap and then sent it to the cement kiln to use as fuel and ingredients to make cement, which is a great thing to do with a tire. But you didn't need to do all that. And I share that example as an approach toward a waste management that was just dumb. That was just a dumb thing to do. To go through adding all those VOC emissions, exposing those folks to VOC, to inhaling the solvents while they were tearing these pieces of green tire apart, to then add a whole other piece of material, wrapping it in saran wrap essentially, so it could be handled and fed into the cement kiln. But it came from a directive that sounded good, but didn't give the local organization the capacity to use its own professional judgment and to implement a system that fit what was really going on. That's my favorite story about why the environmental management systems are such a good directive from that level. Because if you'll hire good people, good professionals, and then do one more thing I want to talk about in a second. If you'll hire those good people and make the line management responsible for considering their environmental aspects in all parts of their organization, then you'll have this continual improvement. Like Peter mentioned earlier when he was talking about ISO 14000, you're not going to fix everything at once like the Japanese tire industry thought they could fix landfills at once. You're not going to fix everything at once, but everybody's going to keep ratcheting up. And that's what our tire plants have done under an implementation of ISO 14001 certified environmental management systems. The other thing that you have to generate besides a standardized system is a culture of caring or a culture of connectedness. Now, I told the story about Hazel flying all the way from the Arctic Circle all the way down to Buenos Aires and back in 10 months. One of the things we've done in our company now is to develop some imagery to highlight inside of our company this connectedness that we have. We're sharing a map of North America. It shows big, nice red and black bees for the Bridgestone facilities. And it demonstrates some of the species of birds and monarch butterflies that migrate back and forth throughout the Americas. And it says, guess what? You and your family might be sharing what these birds are doing back and forth. You and your family may see not just the same species of bird, They're the same exact bird. If you're working at Wilson, North Carolina, and down here in Argentina or Sao Paulo, Brazil. We've used that imagery to develop a culture of connectedness. We're not through. You don't change culture overnight, and you never get through nurturing a good culture. But just like Jonathan said earlier about people's acceptance is going to be crucial to whether or not nanotechnology succeeds as a good thing throughout the globe. People do not care what you know until they know that you care. Absolutely. And I'll speak for someone who spoke a little earlier, Mike Lesnick, who I worked with in the past when I was general counsel for the department that Paul Sloan now runs. There's a man who cares. He is pouring his energy into trying to make sure that we don't cut off the benefits of new technology in areas where things are very different from our lives. Here, we've got clean water. Here, if the concern is you may add a new contaminant to the water, we've got time to say, wait a minute, let's watch that technology, let's test it, and get a real high level of confidence. But if you don't have clean water, and you've got a technology that will give you clean water but might generate some other kind of pollution, you might take that risk of another kind of pollution. The risk assessment is also very localized in terms of the final decision of what needs to be done. And that's why I wanted to share a little bit when Linda asked me to about how we use environmental management systems at Bridgestone Firestone to deal with multinational environmental laws, multi-jurisdictional environmental laws, because if you have a culture of connectedness, if you care, and then you put systems in place to try to assess and deal with the environmental aspects, health and safety aspects as well, you're going to make a few mistakes. There's no way around that. But then you've got the flexibility to deal with the local issues, and you don't have somebody on the top saying, stop, because I don't want that extra risk in my clean water. Well, if I was somewhere where the water wasn't clean, I might accept that risk to get the reduction in the other risk. When we were picking the site that ended up being Monterrey, Mexico for our most recent plant, I had the privilege of being on the site selection team for Bridgestone and traveled to four different states in Mexico and traveled to San Jose down in Costa Rica. And I tell you that because I'm bragging on the company. The company involved their environmental director in the site selection process at the very beginning. And that's what companies are doing these days. They're thinking about that from the very beginning. But what was interesting to me and really surprising, when we talked to the head of the permitting program in San Jose and in three out of those other four countries in Mexico, in their broken English and my worse than broken Spanish, four out of five of those jurisdictional heads said transparency. That was the word they used, was transparency. And they were saying that our systems are not as evolved as they are in the United States, but we care. We really appreciate you coming here to tell us you care and that you're going to have good professionals working on these issues of air emissions and water releases. And if you'll just be transparent, if you'll just have transparency, we'll get the permits to you, we'll work together in a partnership, and go on. So I think that's a very important focus point in terms of the governance aspect. I'm also a patent attorney. I haven't practiced a lot of patent law lately, but as I was thinking about this and transparency, it came to mind, and some of you know this much better than I, that in essence, the patent laws of this country are a quid pro quo deal. I see some head shaking, you know what I'm talking about. The deal is, if you will share your heretofore secret great invention in a patent application, you have to give full disclosure of the best mode of that invention that you know, then we will allow you to commercially protect that invention for some period of time. interesting deal. Part of that is that enforcement process works out as two commercial entities fighting over the issue in the end. Okay? That's where the fight comes about enforcing the patent laws. It's two commercial entities. So, you told the world about your invention, and the government says, now you're going to be able to keep anybody else from making, using, or selling it. But the bottom line fight to enforce that is between two commercial entities. Think about transparency in reference to health issues and environmental issues. Transparency gets us a big step there if the trade-off is, if you will be transparent about your technology, if you will be transparent about the assessment you've given on environmental or health and safety issues, then we're going to allow you to commercially develop this new technology. It seems to me the real tough question is how to balance out, like you have in patent, it's one commercial entity against another. How do you balance out the human or ecosystem concern and the commercial concern that comes at a time of conflict when things don't go right or when someone was wrong in their assessment that it's safe? Because there you're not dealing with questions of infringement or non-infringement. Is it the same invention? You're dealing with questions of how safe is safe, how clean is clean. And those are societal questions. And I just want to close by saying thanks, and that I think that the best approach we've got for that is we can develop a culture of connectedness. That'll be a foundation of caring. And then for the most part, it's going to go well. Thanks for your attention, and Linda, appreciate you inviting me.